Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Spoilers coming out.
I want the world to know.
Spoilers coming out.
Dum dum. Eternal Masters time.
Crap, our song parody game is not very strong.
No, I was so lost when you started doing the first part. I was like, oh no, I wonder how long Josh is going to do this before he launches into the song.
Nah, I just gave it one more measure and I was like, whatever, let's just go.
Yeah, yeah. Technically, its previews are coming out. Spoilers, you put those on cars, okay?
All right, my bad. I don't know the correct terminology. I know it's not leaks.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely not leaks. Oh, boy. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we are incredibly excited. You guys can probably already guess what this episode is going to be about.
Probably because it's in the like title when you click on it.
Oh, yeah, actually, that's a very good point.
But...
spoiler alert, you know what it is.
Spoilers are what we put on cars, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's right. Dang it.
That's, preview alert. I do know. Yes, it is Eternal Masters. The entire set has been released at this point, so we know every single card, and it's awesome.
Yeah, the set comes out on June 10th to a very limited release. We don't actually know how much of it is coming out. We're guessing it's going to be somewhat similar to the original Modern Masters. But more importantly, this set is filled with cards. They should call it Commander Masters.
It really should be. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, sans two cards, it is nuts.
Yeah, super freaking excited. I guess I don't want to get into this whole, like, how limited is the print run and everything. We'll let the professor and other people, like, take that on. For now, I'm just happy to be excited about all these cards. And, I mean, I think a few months ago when it was announced, we did sort of a list of...
yeah,
cards we were hoping for. And there's some cards in here that we thought listen, this is not going to happen, but it'd be sweet. And then some of it actually happened.
Yeah, which is insane because usually when we're like, oh, there's no way they're going to do this, but we would love for it to happen, it actually ended up happening, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, one in particular, Mana Crypt. Wow.
Wow, that cough of yours sounds bizarre.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I need antibiotics. Okay, so let's just jump into our main topic, because I'm so excited to talk about it, the Eternal Masters set review.
This set looks insane. It comes out again June 10th, which is in a couple of weeks from this podcast. Actually, it'll be a week and a half. I highly encourage, if you guys enjoy Limited, to try it out. This set looks absolutely insane. The cards, the power level, everything about it is just through the roof. People are comparing it the closest between a cube and sort of like a Modern Master set. So it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's... wow. I mean, it's almost closer to cube than Modern Masters. Maybe it's just me and my nostalgia for a lot of these old cards, but some of the cards they reprinted are from super, super early. I mean, Sinkhole?
Yeah, that's a... very old card, and one that costs a lot as well, but not anymore, hopefully.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Super excited for this set. It just looks amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait. So should we start? Should we get going?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we talked about our... the first thing that we're going to talk about is the tutor cycle. There is a cycle of tutors, and Josh, almost 100% correct, called it. When we were given our spoiler and recorder episode, we only knew that Mystical Tutor is going to be in the set. And Josh was like, this could be a chance for them to reprint all of the tutors. We're talking about Enlightened Tutor, Vampiric Tutor. And it turns out they got 4 out of 5. So the tutor cycle, we have Mystical Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, Enlightened Tutor, and Gamble for red.
And look, Gamble we did not see coming. I did not even have the guts to call Gamble. It seemed like they wouldn't do that, and they did. Gamble's really expensive, hard to get a hold of. And it's maybe... even above Vampiric, like, the most needed.
Yeah, it gets it into your hand. It's the only red card that tutors yes. to that level of any card. It's pretty nuts. However, yeah. there was no Worldly Tutor.
Which, if they were going to leave one out, Worldly Tutor was the cheapest. It's been reprinted, I think, the most of all of them. Maybe Mystical's equal. But yeah. it was definitely, like, if they were going to leave one out, that was the cheapest one. So it's kind of good that they did. And this is interesting. I hadn't thought about this, but you actually pointed out there's a card that's sort of similar that maybe took its place.
Yeah, it's Natural Order, which is printed at Mythic, I believe, in the set. It's a sorcery for 2 green-green. As an additional cost to cast Natural Order, sacrifice a green creature and search your library for a green creature card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So it is a 4-mana sorcery speed tutor that costs, that will immediately tutor a creature onto the battlefield. Now, in EDH, people use this to grab a Crater Hoof Behemoth, any number of crazy, crazy cards.
You can, the classic play is, like, play a mana dork, play, you know, maybe another mana dork, or on turn 2 or 3, play Natural Order, sacking the mana dork, and then going and putting, like, Terastodon down and blowing up, you know, their lands. And now you've got a 9/9, and they don't have anything.
Yeah. Terastodon, not in this set, but it doesn't matter. Natural Order is still a very powerful card, and it has not seen very many printings. In fact, it's only been printed twice, once in Visions and once in Portal. So it's a card that's definitely up there in price, and it's one that's definitely a staple, I think, of EDH for green yeah. decks.
It's cheating of mana costs. We always say it. Cheating of mana costs, most powerful thing you can do.
Yeah, I mean, but let's talk about Vampiric Tutor for a second. This is so exciting. This is another card that's only been printed twice. Actually, it may have been only printed once. No, it's been printed twice, which is insane because these cards have just slowly climbed in price over the years to the point where it's like, hey, if you want to get all the tutors, you want Demonic Tutor and all this other stuff, you actually are kind of restricted from getting stuff like Vampiric Tutor just because the price point is much higher than the rest of the cards.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about last episode how neither of us even owns a Vampiric Tutor. It's very, very good. It's just for that amount of money, you buy a Demonic Tutor for, you know, a fraction of that, and then you're kind of good. Like, you'd like to have both, but just for that price tag. So Vampiric Tutor is 1 black for an instant. It says, search your library for a card, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. You lose 2 life. So it's basically Mystical Tutor and Lightning Tutor, except there's no restriction on what card you can get. You just also pay 2 life, which, yeah. 2 life.
Yeah, exactly. 2 life is nothing. This is like a perfect card for the Marquesa deck as well, because you don't want to get on the throne, and you want a tutor. And it's
yeah, or Jaleva.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very, very, very good. And again, it's Mythic, right? Yeah, it's Mythic. So it's not going to drop a ton in price, but it should be. At least you have a chance to crack it in a pack, right? You have a chance to pull
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a chance to trade into one if someone else doesn't want it. There's lots of cool things going on here. All right. Because this set is filled, and we're talking filled with cards that you can play in Commander, we're going to be a little more selective about the ones we talk about, just because we'll spend another 2 hours here talking about all these cards, and a lot of them they're all reprints. There's nothing brand new, so we're just going to talk about the cards that are a little bit harder to get, or the cards that are going to look super awesome because this is the first, maybe a first foil printing of it, or just cards that.
Sorry, that's another thing. Is a lot of these cards. Not a lot, but many of them have never been printed in foil before. And so for some of these cards, they're going to be the first chance to get them in foil. That's going to be a big thing. Another thing that's going to add value. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, really, really sweet. Okay, so let's start off with white. We're going to be going in Uberg order today, especially because once we get towards the multicolored artifact land area, we get into some really exciting reprints. First up, Karmic Guide, 3 white-white for a 2/2 flying angel spirit creature. It's flying protection from black and has echo 3 white-white. So at the beginning of your upkeep, if the creature came into your control at the beginning of your last upkeep, you sacrifice it unless you pay its echo cost. So it's like a tax on it, kind of like a cumulative upkeep kind of thing, but yep. not. When Karmic Guide enters the battlefield, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. I feel like this card doesn't get played enough, but it is ridiculously powerful. It's a 5-mana sorcery, if you think about it, that gets any creature from your graveyard into the battlefield.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It also is really good with flicker effects yeah. to just reuse it and put off that echo until later. A lot of times, eventually, you're just like, whatever, I don't pay the echo. Yeah, it's super good. Again, it cheats mana cost because it can get any size creature from your graveyard directly onto the battlefield. So, you know, obviously the very big creatures can't even go to the graveyard, they get shuffled back in. But there's a whole lot of creatures that you know, cost less than five or cost more than five mana. You know, like Nulamog, which you wouldn't get the cast trigger, but you know, still it's an indestructible 10/10 that mills them 20 when it attacks. Like, still pretty good to get it for five mana.
Yeah, I mean, just Terracidon again, Creator of Behemoth, cards that have entered the battlefield affect Sun Titan. Just there's so many good things you can get with Karmic Guide. So it's a very solid card. I'm surprised it doesn't see more play. I think people see the echo cost of it and go like, meh, maybe not. But no, truly, this card is absurd.
And then the Command Zone, one of our favorite cards, the Mother of Runes.
Runes! With the dopest art. This is the Therese Nielsen special.
This art is sick.
It's the best.
I can't believe it. It's Mother like she's holding
awesome.
A bowl of fire.
I mean, I can't wait to use this card in draft if I open it.
It's oh, this card gonna... is sick in draft. You never pass it.
You never... Well, you could pass it, conceivably, in this draft format.
If you're passing it, then you open something awesome.
Yeah, it's true. The Mother of Runes!
She's the Mother of Runes. Let me read her. She costs one white mana. She's a creature, human cleric, a 1/1. You tap her, target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn.
Pretty good.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, especially as a turn one play. It just basically says it blanks a removal spell. It blanks so much. It blanks a blocker. You know, it card's nuts. I really enjoy that card.
I mean, you could do things like block with Mother of Runes and then tap Mother of Runes to give itself protection from whatever color the creature it's blocking is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's just a very simple thing.
Yeah, very, very simple. Swords of Plowshares is seeing another reprint. You guys all know what this does. It's one white for an instant, exile target creature. Its controller gains life equal to its power. This was also in Conspiracy, but this is just a card that you'll put in a lot of your decks that have white. So it's just nice to see that it's going to be back into the circle. Back into the cycle.
The circle of life. Is that what you meant?
It's back in rotation for us, I guess.
And it's worth a couple bucks, you know, so it's nice to have uncommons in the set. And there's quite a few that are worth, you know, more than 10 cents.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the next one is worth a lot.
I was very surprised, but because I didn't know this when you put it on the list. I was like, Wall of Omens. Wall of Omens is like $5 card. I had no idea.
Sees a lot of play in Modern, and it's just a great card.
So it's one and a white for a creature wall. It's an 0/4 with Defender. When Wall of Omens enters the battlefield, draw a card.
Very simple, obviously very powerful. And in any decks that can flicker this or abuse this ability, it's great. It's also just like if you're searching for a good 2-drop and you're finding that a lot of your opponents are playing aggro-esque decks and you're just dying to creature combat and stuff, like Wall of Omens, why not? You get a wall.
Plus it's a $5 uncommon. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, opening that in the pack, that's every single one of these packs could have $5 commons. Like, that's how ridiculous this set is looking so far.
So, on to blue?
Yes, on to blue. I'm going to start off with Counterspell. And you're like, wait, what are you talking about Counterspell? This card's been printed a bunch of times. Well, I said Counterspell because this Counterspell is a common. It has really cool art and it has zero flavor text. It just says counter target spell on it, which means that this card is probably actually going to be worth a decent amount as a foil version, and it's going to be one of the cooler versions of this card to get in foil as well.
Yeah, I believe so. Just looking at it, it looks super clean with the text box, and all it says is counter target spell. It's sweet.
Yeah, there's a card that says end the turn, time stop, and there's a specific version of it, and I think it's not 10th edition, but there's one edition that just says end the turn. There may be a promo version of it, and it costs way more just because it doesn't have a whole block of text after what it means to end the turn, you know? So it just says end the turn. It's like, whoa, how cool.
Pretty
sweet. Counterspell has that flavor as well.
Arcanus, the Omnipotent, is in the set as well. That's 3/3 blue for a legendary creature wizard. It's a 3/4. Says tap, draw 3 cards. I love that because anything that has a tap ability and then drawing cards is awesome. And it also says pay 2 blue and then return Arcanus to its owner's hand. So you can protect it from removal if as long as you've got 4 mana up, which is good. I rarely use it. Mostly I just draw cards, but it's still sweet.
Yeah. This kind of looks like Tyrael from Diablo.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Clug, get on that altar. Let's go. Oh, this next one's a big one. Force of Will is one of the first cards spoiled from Eternal Masters. 3 blue-blue for an instant. You may pay 1 life and exile a blue card from your hand rather than playing Force of Will's mana cost counter target spell. So it's a free counter spell, minus a life and a blue card out of your hand. But we all know how powerful zero mana counter spells are. This is one of the best cards in Magic the Gathering, flat out. It's a mainstay in Legacy. And it finally is seeing a reprint, and Therese Nielsen again gets to do the art because she did the original art, and so asking her to bring back and do it again, that's super cool.
Yeah, this is brand new art. It's kind of the marquee art for the set. It's one, like you said, one of the most powerful cards of all time. Very expensive, I think around $70 or so before this. So again, this is a great just chance to crack it in a pack where it, like, I have one Force of Will, you know, I bought one.
Oh gosh.
And I was like, only reason I bought it was because I was like, it's Force of Will. Like, I should own one of these so I can justify it. But it's still crazy. Like, it's just great that you're going to have a chance to get one of these, you know, just at least get lucky lottery ticket style and maybe open one.
Yep. It is certainly a
lottery
card's
bonkers in Commander. I mean, it's crazy bonkers because it's card disadvantage because you have to discard a blue card to cast it for zero. But in Commander, we just don't care as much because you might have Consecrated Sphinx on the table or something.
Yeah, or you just have cards in your hand and you want to tap out and still protect it. Like, people usually don't see a zero mana counterspell coming.
Yeah, you could be casting Insurrection, which makes you, you know, you got to tap all your mana to do it. And normally if they counter that, then that doesn't work. But all of a sudden you can protect it. And that could be game winning rather than just something that fizzles out.
Yeah, totally. Love it. I mean, we play Pact of Negation quite often in our decks. And this is, I think, just strictly better in every sense of the word.
Yeah. The next one is Hydroblast. So there's two of these. There's Pyroblast and Hydroblast, and they're both in the set, and they both have new art, and they're both sweet. So Hydroblast is 1 blue for an instant. It says, choose one. Counter target spell if it's red, or destroy target permanent if it's red.
Yeah. This card's in Legacy sideboards all over the place.
Yeah, and Pyroblast is the red version, which does the same thing, but it counters a blue spell or destroys a blue permanent, which is actually the better of the two. Not only are more blue cards played, but also red just don't normally can't counterspell things. Yeah. So, but both are sweet, and the art is sweet, and they're sort of like mirror images of each other a little bit.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's the first time this is going to see a foil printing as well. I believe that's not a promo. So,
oh, the next one, dude.
Yep, the next one. Jace the Mind Sculptor. Big Daddy Jace, 2 blue-blue for a planeswalker that comes in with 3 loyalty. He has 4 abilities that he can do. The first one, +2, look at the top card of target player's library. You may put that card on the bottom of that player's library, so Fate Sealing. Very powerful in 1v1. But really, he's here for his zero. Is zero, draw 3 cards and put 2 cards from your hand on top of your library in any order. So he can brainstorm forever if you keep him alive.
Whose idea was that? I mean, brainstorm one of the most... Brainstorm, one of the most powerful cards of all time. So powerful that these quote-unquote fair versions of Brainstorm, like Ponder and stuff, still get banned.
Yeah.
And that's a zero ability? Jeez.
Yeah, he can just do it for free, which is insane. His -1 is return target creature to his owner's hand. So every single one of these abilities is incredibly powerful. And his -12, exile all cards from target player's library, then that player shuffles his or her hand into his or her library.
So you're just like, well, how many cards you got in your hand? Oh, 4? Well, now you have 4 cards in your library.
I mean, I don't think that -12 has ever been done. Jace comes down and he brainstorms for me as many times as he can before he eventually dies and people realize, oh, we need to kill him immediately.
It's insanely powerful. Again, very expensive card. Yeah. So it's great to have a shot at it again. I'm going to let you do the next one because I want to do the one after that.
Okay, cool. We have Peregrine Drake, 4 in the blue for a 2/3 creature Drake at common, by the way. This card is also not a cheap one. It has flying. When Peregrine Drake enters the battlefield, untap up to 5 lands. So, again, if you have cards that like are the bounce lands that tap for 2 mana, you're getting 2 mana for 1 here when you cast Peregrine Drake. So this is an awesome card in decks that have those ways to abuse their lands. They have Temple of the False Gods in there, etc.
Well, and Tombs. Flicker, like if you have... Let's say you have Eldrazi Displacer in this, you just go infinite mana.
Yep, immediately. As long as you have the colorless source for it. But Peregrine Drake is awesome. Love this card.
Yeah, very, very good. And it's like you said, it's a common that's worth like $3 or something, so that's pretty great.
Yeah, it used to be an uncommon. I mean, we see that a lot across this set as well. A lot of cards have been shifted rarity-wise. They'll go from rare to common or uncommon to rare. Sometimes they'll go from like common to or like not never even having a rarity to mythic, as is the case with Mana Crypt. So there's a lot of like fun little shifts there. So if you Pauper players are out there, just pay attention to what cards are now up at common.
Okay, the next one's pretty... It's pretty cool that it got a reprint.
This is awesome.
It's Prodigal Sorcerer. It's Tim. Two and a blue for a 1/1 human wizard. Tap Prodigal Sorcerer deals one damage to target creature or player. It's probably my second favorite creature of all time. It's got new art. I'm excited to draft it. This is just good on all levels.
Yeah, this card is so great, especially in limited too. Like, that's why I'm really, really excited is that it's going to be really fun to draft and use this card. And the new art is great. There's a new foil version of this card now. It's Tim. It's almost like an honor to see him in the set, you know?
Yeah, it really is. It's you know, when I saw it, I just got a warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, he reminds me of Lenny Kravitz a little bit.
Yeah, the picture. It's true.
Him and like Chadwick Boseman mixed together.
I want to get away.
I want to ping you for.
I hung out with Lenny Kravitz in an elevator once.
And by
hung out, I meant rode it for like four floors, and then I got off, and he was still on it. That's it.
Nice.
Cool story.
You know what? You know what that means?
What?
You're faster than Lenny Kravitz. You got to where you were going before he did.
I never thought of it that way, but it's awesome. Is Lenny Kravitz known for being fast?
I have no idea. Maybe fast with his guitar licks. I don't know. We're already on a tangent, and we're going deep into this. Too deep. We're talking about Lenny Kravitz and Eternal Masters in the same sentence.
I want to get away. I want to fly away. Okay. All right, let's move on. People, you know this.
Yeah, it's true. We are, you know, we're great. We're great musicians over here. Let's move on to black.
Oh, yeah, great.
First card up. Speaking of musicianship and artistry, we have Blood Artist. One in the black for a 0/1 creature vampire. Whenever Blood Artist or another creature dies, target player loses one life and you gain one life. Blood Artist is also a card that for being an uncommon is now up in the $2 to $3 range. So that's awesome that it's getting reprinted because this card, again, sees a lot of play in EDH, especially in decks that go infinite and just kill everyone with this on the board with a couple other cards.
Yeah, this card is sort of sneaky good. I think a lot of people probably read it and go, well, what? And then there's a lot of decks that can just go off and kill everybody with Blood Artist. It's crazy.
Yeah, very powerful card.
What's the next one we've got on the list? Oh, Cabal Therapy. This is an interesting one. It's one black for a sorcery. Name a non-land card. Target player reveals his or her hand and discards all cards with the same name. And then as flashback... sacrifice a creature, so if you sack a creature, you can Cabal Therapy again, which is amazing because you just looked at their hand, so it's a lot easier the second time.
This is a $10 card.
Yeah, it's expensive. It's $10. Would you play this in EDH, Jimmy?
Only if I get to, like, flash... No, I don't think I would. It depends, right? So against the deck, like, if I was only playing against Josh Lee Quidex and he has... a bunch of like, you know, five color Marchesa Nekusar decks, I would maybe play this. But if the meta really has to demand that you need to get a specific card out of someone's hand.
If it exiled, then I would be way more likely to do it. Yeah. Putting it in the graveyard is generally just not that great. So, but it is, but you are going to first pick it because it's just worth money.
Yeah, and it's also a card that is very good in non-singleton formats because if they have multiple copies of, like, a Force of Will or, you know, anything in their hand, not Force of Will because it's a counterspell, but you'd be able to get rid of it, essentially.
It's an uncommon. That's a $10 uncommon?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
There's a few of those in here. Wow. It's pretty awesome.
Well, this next card's worth more than $10.
Oh, yes. It is Entomb. One black for an instant. Search your library for a card and put that card into your graveyard, then shuffle your library. This can be one of the most powerful turn one plays in almost any format you can play Entomb in. You can drop some crazy things in there. It's also a way, in case you're about to get milled out or something, you can like drop an Eldrazi in there and shuffle your deck. You know, Entomb has a lot of different uses, and it's... if you're using your graveyard as a second hand, then Entomb is amazing. So some decks need to have Life from the Loam in their graveyard. You could play Entomb just to make sure that Life of the Loam gets there.
You know, this reminds me, I forgot to mention, at GP Vegas, I got into a game with Alex Kessler. There was a guy named Mike, who just happens to be from Burbank. He's local. And then Mr. A.E. Marling. And Mr. Marling cast in Tomb, I don't know, turn two or three. And I don't remember exactly what the cards were. He was playing a Stitcher Geralf deck. It was a zombie deck. Anyway, he just ended up using Entombed to go infinite on turn like six or seven. The funny thing is when he sat down, he's like, oh, no, this is just my Vorthos deck. It's just a story deck. Don't worry. And then he just infinites out on like turn six or seven. And we're like, all right. I did not expect that from the story deck. Yeah, Entombed is that kind of card where it feels like not as good as a tutor when you read it, but it's actually sometimes a lot better because – for certain decks, just putting it into the graveyard actually gives you more access to it.
Yeah, totally.
It's super. Yeah, I had to buy one of these a little while ago, and I was like, man, this card is expensive.
No, now you can open it in the pack. How exciting.
Oh, the next one is, what is it, Icarid?
Yep.
Is that like Kid Icarus?
I think so.
I don't know. That's just a video game for
us. It's just Icarid.
So Icarid is 3 and a black for a creature horror. It's a 3/1. It has haste. At the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Icarid. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Icarid is in your graveyard, you may exile a black creature card other than Icarid from your graveyard. If you do, return Icarid to the battlefield. So it's just sort of a very persistent threat.
Yeah, it's also a $7 threat. It's just one of those cards that's like, oh, cool, this is a card that is awesome and limited. Could be very good if you have a lot of Edict effects or, you know, sort of the Grave Pact effects like Icarid. It's just this thing that always keeps coming back and keeps getting sacked for everyone else to, you know, sack a creature too. So it's just another card. I'm glad it's there. We made it.
We made it.
Yeah. This next card, Necropotentio. Black for an enchantment. Skip your draw step. Whenever you discard a card, exile that card from your graveyard. And you can pay one life, exile the top card of your library face down, put that card into your hand at the beginning of your next end step. So essentially, you don't draw a card and you move the draw step per card is one life, and you move it to the beginning of your next end step. So with this, you can conceivably draw 39 cards in Commander if you're at 40 life. It is ridiculously powerful. The casting cost is a little crazy, but it's just a very good card. If you're the kind of deck that has a lot of flash stuff in there, plays Vedalken Orrery, doesn't really care about not having cards during your main phases and is fine drawing a lot more cards at the cost of life at your end step instead.
It's really just the main phase you play it, right? Because the main phase you play it, then on that end step, you're going to draw a bunch of cards.
Yep.
And unless you're really worried about your discard phase or something, you know, maybe then you won't get access to like a ton of cards. But most of the time you see people drop this and then just draw like 12 cards.
Yeah, and even if you only draw two, let's say you drop it, you take your turn, you draw the card for the turn, play Necropotence. You're not going to draw a card next turn. Just pay two life to draw two cards at the end of your turn. You've already done more than, now you have those cards a whole turn cycle early, if that makes sense. So if it's a counter spell, it could be anything else. But you have those cards now as opposed to on your next draw step. So the skip your draw step is really not relevant here.
It's pretty insane, this card. It's one of the better card draw spells ever. Like you said, you have to be pretty heavy black. I would play this more, but I play so many 5-color and 4- and 3-color decks that it's really hard for the black casting costs to just make sure you can always get it. But when people get it out, and then when I've had it out, you just feel amazing. You're like, all right, I can draw as many cards as I feel like. This is awesome.
Yeah, killing it.
The next card is a card we talk about all the time, and I'm glad they're reprinting it because it came out in a Commander product, and it's gotten pretty expensive. It's Toxic Deluge, or Toxic Deluge.
Yep.
It's 2 and a black for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast Toxic Deluge, pay X life. All creatures get -X/-X until end of turn.
Yeah, that is... I think it's the best board wipe in Commander, honestly.
It's definitely, it might be the best. It definitely
gets around so much.
It's definitely up there because, for one, it costs 3 mana. So it's the cheapest of the board wipes. Most other board wipes that are this cheap are limited. Like, they'll only do 3 damage to all creatures or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then because it's -X/-X, it actually kills all the indestructible creatures, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have to take some life, but we have 40 life, so that's usually like a small downside.
Yeah, it's just, and it, you can very selectively do it too. You can do -5, -5, and you have a 6/6 in play or whatever. You know, it's very controllable. Your life total is, if your life total is affecting how much you can Toxic Deluge for, you may not have been winning that game anyway, but it can still get you out of holes that you otherwise would not, it would never be able to survive from.
Yeah, it's a great card. It's one of those cards where I have a few, but yeah, I haven't really wanted to buy more. So there's quite a few decks I have with black in them that don't have one.
Yep.
So
very good stuff.
I'm excited that all my black decks will now have a Toxic Deluge.
I am too. All right. Chain Lightning. We're moving into red. And of course, Lightning, a one red sorcery. Burn spell. That's where I want to be.
This is one of those most flavorful cards from early Magic.
Yeah, and it has been climbing steadily in price for a very long time. So it's not easy to get anymore. Like, it's like a $10 card from Legends, I think. And there's like a premium foil version of it as well in one of those deck series. But now it's here. It's great. It's a huge popper staple. It's one red for a sorcery. It deals 3 damage to target creature or player. Then that player or that creature's controller may pay red. If the player does, he or she may copy this spell and choose a new target for that copy. So if you have enough red mana, you can like fling the Chain Lightning in another direction.
That's pretty funny. It's pretty great.
Pretty crazy.
Most of the time, it's just another. It's a second copy of Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, certainly.
Pyroblast is the next one we have written down. This we talked about earlier. It's the inverse of Hydroblast. It's a one red mana, and then you choose one counter target spell if it's blue, or destroy targets permanent if it's blue.
Yep.
Same thing. Yep. Nothing else to say. We already talked about it.
You want to do the next one?
Sure. Price of Progress. This feels more like a Jimmy card. I'm going to let you read it.
All right. One in a red for an instant. Price of Progress deals damage to each player equal to twice the number of non-basic lands that player controls. Let's go. Mono red decks. This is like a finisher, honestly, in Commander. This card is also like a $4 card. So now it's an uncommon, which is awesome. But yeah, this card's sweet.
This card just says kill Josh.
Yeah. This card is often like Josh. Are you ready to take 26 damage?
I mean, this card straight kill me. This think about in the 5-color lands deck.
Yeah. Oh, God.
There's not a single basic in that, and its whole job is to just get lands into the battlefield. It could just easily do 80 damage.
Can't wait to put this in my mono red deck because I didn't have it before. Hey. Very exciting.
The next one, super exciting. It's Sneak Attack.
Oh, yeah.
3 in a red, enchantment. You pay 1 red mana, and it says you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. That creature gains haste. Sacrifice the creature at the beginning of the next end step. So you just, it's 1 red mana to get a creature out, and it attacks that turn, or it has haste. And then there's all kinds of ways around the sacrifice thing, and sometimes you just want to sacrifice it anyway, or you could sacrifice it to Ashnod's Altar and actually gain mana on the exchange, stuff like that.
Yeah, and notably a lot of these effects that are like, hey, put this creature from here onto the battlefield for free, almost always say exile the further we got into Magic's history. And Sneak Attack is an old enough card that it just says sacrifice the creature. So I play a Felden deck that loves taking creatures from the graveyard and putting them onto the battlefield again. Sneak Attack does the same thing where it can put a creature into the graveyard so Felden has a target for it. It's kind of like a discard outlet in a weird, bizarre way as well. For one red, you get to discard any card in your hand at the end of the turn. And you also get the additional bonus that sometimes they just come in and swing and attack for a billion damage. So
it also works great with cards like Marchesa, because if you bring it in with haste, swing with it, you're attacking the person with the most life or tied for the most life, then it'll get a 1/1 counter. Then when you sacrifice it, it'll actually come back on the battlefield. And what did you just do there? You basically cast the card for 1 red mana.
Yep.
And
pretty awesome.
Sneak Attack actually doesn't. Like, it doesn't say you can only do this once per turn. So if you've got 4 red mana, you could drop 4 creatures on. I mean, that's when it kind of gets insane, is if you get Sneak Attack out on turn 4, sometimes on turn 5, you can just literally, like, hit somebody for a bajillion because you just pay, like, 3 red mana and drop 3 huge creatures and swing.
Yeah.
I mean,
very powerful.
If they're Eldrazi, they have Annihilator. Like, in the Joyra deck, now, again, I don't own a Sneak Attack because it's expensive. And I just haven't had a deck where I absolutely needed it. But now I'm like, yeah, in the Joyra deck, which plays like all the Eldrazi, this card is insanity.
Yep. Even if it shovels into your library, it doesn't matter. Once you get it down and it's able to just swing and then just wreck people's faces, you won't need it again. You're in a commanding position, and you just draw anything at that point, and it's, again, live with sneak attack on the battlefield.
I mean, think of playing sneak attack on turn 4. That's without any ramp. And then on turn 5, you sneak in, you know, the old Ulamog.
It doesn't, the new Ulamog.
Or the new one, but the old one's better because of Annihilator. And you swing at them. It's turn 5. You swing at them with Annihilator 2 or 4 or whatever, depending on the... on which Eldrazi it is, they're done. Like, that player's in huge trouble if they'll not get Annihilator forward on turn 5.
Yeah, there's not much they can do. They just have to, they immediately become crippled and have to figure out how to get back from that position, which is not an easy task.
Yeah, this card is amazing.
Yep. All right, we have a red mythic coming up next. It's World Gorger Dragon, 3 red, red, red for a 7/7 flying trample Nightmare Dragon. It's pretty exciting. When World Gorger Dragon enters the battlefield, exile all other permanents you control. When World Gorger Dragon leaves the battlefield, return the exiled cards to the battlefield under their owner's control. So, if you have a way to flicker this consistently, something like Animate Dead goes infinite with World Gorger Dragon. It's actually a combo you can pull off in EMA. You can generate infinite mana because every time World Gorger Dragon exits the battlefield, you get your lands and stuff back. You can tap them for mana, and then World Gorger comes back into play once you cast Animate Dead to target it, and it just continues to cycle. So you can do lots of crazy things with it. It just says exile all other permanents you control. That's an insane amount of text. And then, and if you have any Enter the Battlefield abilities, those all happen again when those exiled cards come back when World Gorger Dragon leaves the battlefield.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy. Be very careful, because then somebody does something like takes control of it, or...
Yeah.
You know, or pacifisms it, you know, something that gets rid of it without it leaving the battlefield. Obviously, you're not playing World Gorger fairly. You're doing something unfair with it.
Yeah.
Like you said, with the flickering or the Animate Dead or whatever.
Has a very high upside.
Yeah, it's crazy. The next one's interesting because I wouldn't have put this on the list. You did. It's Young Pyromancer. It's 1 and a red for a 2/1 human shaman. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 red elemental creature token onto the battlefield. This was originally from M14, I want to say.
Yep.
It's kind of the marquee red 2-drop, if there is one.
Yeah, and foil versions of this run for like 20 bucks plus. And because every Eternal Masters has a foil in it, getting a foil Young Pyromancer is totally doable. And this is a card that sees a lot of play in Legacy as well. This is the only other time it's ever been reprinted, so... Welcome back, Young Pyromancer.
Welcome back, Young Pyromancer. That was creepy. All right, on to green. Our first green card is Argothian Enchantress. It's 1 and a green for a 0/1 human druid, has Shroud. Says, whenever you cast an enchantment spell, draw a card.
People were a little upset that this was in the mythic slot, but it's a very good card if you have an enchantment-based deck.
It is perplexing that it is in the mythic slot. I'll give them that. This one's a head scratcher.
It is. I mean, compare the power level of this to Jace the Mind Sculptor, and you've sort of got your answer.
Yeah, not the mythic you want to open, but it is useful in certain decks, and there are definitely Enchantress decks. So there's the Verdurin Enchantress, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple other cards that are sort of similar to this. And if you sort of package them all into one deck, with a bunch of enchantments, obviously, then they can be the engine that kind of makes the deck go.
Yeah. Next up, this is totally a popper card. Elvish Vanguard, 1 in a green. It's a 1/1 elf warrior. Whenever another elf enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on Elvish Vanguard. This used to be a rare. It's a very good elf card. Now you can run 4 of them in your popper decks and go to town. That's all there is to say about that.
That's cool. Green Sun Zenith is next. It's a green and X for a sorcery. Search your library for a green creature card with converted mana cost X or less. Put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Shuffle Green Sun Zenith into its owner's library. So it's a two. It's kind of like Court of Calling. It only gets a green creature. Of course, it costs a little bit less. Doesn't have Convoke. Anyway, it shuffles itself back into your library. It's a very good card in a lot of green decks because if you're playing sort of toolboxy stuff, then you may need to go get specific creatures. Of course, you can always get combo pieces and things like that.
Yeah, and it puts it onto the battlefield, so that is always nice too. So you're not actually, you don't have to pay for it again after you tutor for it. You pay the cost for the tutor, and it pops it on the battlefield, so that's nice.
Yeah, you can kind of look at Green Sun Zenith as it's another copy of every green creature in your deck. It just costs one more mana.
Yep. That's a very good way of looking at it. Next up, we have Regal Force. Four green for a 5/5 creature elemental. When Regal Force enters the battlefield, draw a card for each creature you control.
Each green creature.
Green creature, yeah. So it loves, obviously, the forest as well. Now, this card has only seen, again, one printing ever. So it is an awesome card for, like, you know, green decks that want to be playing a lot of green creatures, green
token
mini decks, elf decks, token decks, yeah. And especially if you're heavy in green and don't have that much card draw, otherwise this is one of the best sort of, like, if you pay 7 mana and draw, like, 15 cards, that is awesome.
And really big mana costs are, if you're in green, that's not as prohibitive, because green's just really good at making a lot of mana, so.
Totally.
Oh, the next one's exciting. It's Sylvan Library. This is definitely a commander
so
staple.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's one in a green for an enchantment. At the beginning of your draw step, you may draw two additional cards. If you do, choose two cards in your hand drawn this turn. For each of those cards, pay four life or put the card on top of the library. So you basically, at the start of your turn, you draw three cards, and then you choose one of them, and you put the other two back, unless you want to keep one of the other two, and then you can keep them at the cost of four life each.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Obviously, with 20 life in 1v1, this is very hard to keep a lot of cards, but this can also redraw three cards, choose the best one, put the other two on top every single turn. So in EDH, this card is, I'd say, a must play in every single green deck. It just, the ability it provides you, especially as early as turn two, is just unparalleled.
Yeah, just you can stack cards there too, like the high casting cost stuff. Well, I can't cast that yet, so I don't need to draw it yet. So I'll make sure I draw a land this turn. And also, of course, we know there are many creatures, and not just creatures, but other effects in Magic that care about what the top card of your library is. Well, this lets you know what the top card of your library is, so all of a sudden you can reliably use those type of effects. Sylvan Library, just so good. I think you're totally right. There's very few green decks that, if they don't have a Sylvan Library, wouldn't be improved by having one.
Agreed. All right. We're done with the primary colors. Let's move on to multicolored. First up is a reprint that people have been clamoring for a very long time. Baleful Strix was originally printed in Commander, I believe, or Plane Chase. It's blue and a black for a 1/1 artifact creature bird. It has flying and death touch. And if that's not enough, when Baleful Strix enters the battlefield, draw a card. This card is just overall incredibly useful. It has so many different things that's good about it. It's an artifact, it's flying, it's got death touch, and it also draws you a card, so it replaces itself. And it's great. I'm just glad it's here. I'm glad that it is an uncommon. Oh, no, it's a rare. I'm just glad to have this card back, because it's a really fun utility card. If you're playing like an Esper deck that loves artifacts, this card is super good in that.
Yeah, it's very, very efficient. It's just hyper efficient. Like, you get that out, you didn't lose a card because you drew a card, and it's just going to keep you safe from a lot of early plays, because no one's going to just want to trade off their thing for your 1/1 flyer that you already drew a card off of.
Yeah, exactly.
The next card, banned in Modern, super powerful, Bloodbraid, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, Bloodbraid Elf. Man, say that three times faster. Maybe I'm just tired. It's costs two, a green and a red, for a 3/2 elf berserker has haste, and it also has cascade. So cascade is when you cast this spell, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card that costs less, so less than the 4 mana. You may cast it without paying its mana cost. Put the exiled cards on the bottom in a random order. So these cards with cascade, you'll know if you play against Maelstrom Wanderer in your playgroup, which is insanely powerful, and also in this set, that cascade is crazy powerful. It's card advantage because you get another card, but it also casts the card.
Yep. For free.
And it casts it, so you get cast triggers and stuff, and it cascade is like so good. So many people will play, we've talked about this a few times in the past, something like Bloodbraid Elf, or we're going to talk about Shardless Agent in a little bit, where because they're low CMC, they're 4 and 3 CMC, they'll actually build their decks with only like one or two cards that are under that CMC, so they're guaranteed to hit those cards if they use Bloodbraid Elf or Shardless Agent.
Yeah, which is really crazy. It's an easy way to like make sure you get your combo pieces off.
Yeah, if you, If you build your deck around something that costs 2 mana, you can basically play only Shardless Agent as your only as a 3-drop. Or sorry, not only Shardless Agent. You can play like Shardless Agent or Bloodbraid, and Bloodbraid's going to find Shardless Agent, which is going to find the 2-drop if you have nothing else that costs less than 3 or less, basically.
Yeah. So, also, this card will take cards that have stuff like Suspend on them and just be able to cast it. So if you play this and then pop Ancestral Vision out, you don't actually suspend it for 4 mana. You just draw 3 cards immediately.
Oh, this card's so good.
Yeah.
Cascade is just so good.
Yep. Next up, the greatest thief in the multiverse is back to steal from us again. It's Dak Faden, 1BR for a planeswalker. Dak comes in with 3 loyalty. He can +1 to make a target player draw 2 cards and discard 2 cards. He can -2 to gain control of target artifact. And he -6s with you get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell that targets one or more permanents, gain control of those permanents. So he is truly the greatest thief. He was first printed in Conspiracy. He's back now at the mythic level. Gain control of an artifact for -2 is incredible. I usually play Dak and then steal a Gilded Lotus, and I love my life.
Yeah, it's the best. And then even if Dak dies, it's not that bad. You're still up mana, basically.
Yeah, a 3-mana steal a Lotus is like, all right, thumbs up.
And then if he doesn't die, which often he doesn't because that's just the way it goes, then you're just starting to get some card advantage and then steal something else.
Yeah.
Dak's crazy good, was only printed the one time, is very expensive because of it. It's good to get another printing.
Yeah, and also a chance to get a foil version of it, because the foil version of Dak Faden is, I believe, several hundred dollars or something.
Really?
Crazy. Yeah,
wow.
It's out there, because it's only been seen once.
One time, so. Yeah.
Yeah, very exciting.
The next card is the aforementioned Maelstrom Wanderer. So that's 5, a blue, a red, and a green. So 8 mana total, legendary creature elemental. It's a 7/5. It says, creatures you control have haste. But that wasn't powerful enough. It says Cascade. But that wasn't powerful enough. It says Cascade again. So you cast Maelstrom Wanderer, and then you flip cards from the top of your library until you find a spell that costs 7 or less, and then you cast that for free, and then you do that again.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. People play this as a commander for good reason.
Maelstrom Wanderer decks are some of the most powerful decks, and as soon as they get to the mana, and usually there's a ton of ramp in them, then they cast Maelstrom Wanderer and their board is ridiculous because the stuff they cast has haste because Maelstrom Wanderer says creatures you control have haste. It's insane. Jack Landis, feature match Jack, he played a Maelstrom Wanderer deck against us in one of the Commander games.
Yep, he smashed my face in with it.
Yeah, he smashed mine too.
Also, I might add that both Bloodbraid Elf and Maelstrom Wanderer and a lot of other cards in the set have brand new art. And the art looks sick. It looks awesome. Like, this new Maelstrom Wanderer is going to be the go-to version, I think, if I ever build this deck.
Well, and foils of this are going to be a lot, because Maelstrom was already up there because, again, I think it's only been printed the one time. So, was it in From the Vault? I think it was From the Vault or Commander's Arsenal or something. So maybe it's been printed twice, but whatever.
Yeah. Either way, the card is awesome. It was in Plane Chase, Commander's Arsenal, and then the original... Actually, that's it. Just Plane Chase and
Commander's
Arsenal. Yeah, so this card's awesome. The new art is totally sweet. Can't wait. Can't wait.
The next one was only from Plane Chase, right?
Vindicate?
Shardless.
Oh, Shardless Agent. Yes. So the next card is Shardless Agent. I believe this has only been printed in Plane Chase. Again, this is the blue-red... This is the blue-green version of Bloodbraid Elf. It's just 1 blue and a green for a 2/2 that has Cascade. And again, people will build decks around this as well. There's a Judge promo of this, but otherwise the Plane Chase version is like, it's like $10 or something crazy.
Yeah.
All these prices are going to go down, fortunately. But yeah, lovely card.
They'll probably rebound, though, as we saw with like Doubling Season and stuff from the first Modern Masters. It went down for a little while, and then it's right back to where it was.
Totally.
Shardless Agent is actually sort of sneakily better than Bloodbraid Elf and Commander, because it's a lot easier to build your deck with only a couple 2-drops. Than it is to build your deck with only a couple 3 or 2-drops. So Shardless in Commander can be like, literally, I only have one thing that costs 2 mana or less. And so when I cast Shardless Agent, I always get it.
Yeah, totally.
Yes, so good. Vindicate, the next one. Vindicate used to be so great. It's still very good, but they keep printing Utter Ends and Anguish Unmakings, which has made it a little bit worse. It's
still an amazing card, though.
It's still an amazing card, and I still want to put it in every deck that's in black-white. So it's one black-white, so 3 mana total for a sorcery. Destroy target permanent. So two things going on here that's a little different than something like Utter End. Utter End is an instant, costs one colorless mana, or sorry, one generic mana more, so 4 mana total. It says destroy, or sorry, exile target non-land permanent. So it's weird because Utter End exiles, it's at instant speed, but it can't hit lands. Vindicate is sorcery speed, costs one less mana, but it can hit lands. It sort of makes them, I think Vindicate, I don't know which one's better. It's really interesting. I sort of think instant speed is very, very powerful.
I think Anguish Unmaking is the best one, Josh.
Well, yeah, of course. Thank you. Then they made Anguish Unmaking, which is just Utter End, but it costs one less mana and 3 life instead.
Yeah.
But hitting lands is huge.
Yeah, it's sorcery speed. It is destroying. It's not exiling it. It's still very, very powerful, obviously, just because it is more flexible in that way that you can grab lands with it. Yeah, I mean, take care of someone's Glacial Chasm. Sounds pretty good to me.
I mean, basically, if you have a deck with black and white, all three of those are probably in it. They're better than, you know, most other single target removal spells because they're so versatile. Yeah. They hit almost everything, or literally in Vindicate's case, they hit everything.
Yeah, unfortunately, Vindicate cannot get rid of a lot of the Eldrazi if they're indestructible. That's sort of like the big thing is it doesn't
yeah, that's a good
indestructible
point.
Stuff. But at the same time, it can still get lands. And again, I think it's meta dependent. I think you don't necessarily have to run all three. You could be fine running 2 out of 3 and then the swords or Path to Exile and all that stuff. But yeah, it just depends.
I kind of miss the TIE fighter in the art though.
Yeah, me too. The TIE advanced.
Yeah.
All right. The last multicolored card we have here is the one and only Deathrite Shaman. This card is, it's got to be one of the best elves ever printed.
I think it's the best one drop of all time.
Yeah, outside of like Sol Ring, right?
Best no, creature. I'm that one drop creature, yeah. I mean, Delver is the other one, I guess.
Yeah, but I think for our...
For EDH, us, it's definitely
yeah,
the best.
This or like birds, but this is still amazing. So Deathrite Shaman is, it only costs 1 mana. It's either black or green, so it's a hybrid mana. It's a creature elf shaman 1/2. You can tap it to exile target land card from a graveyard, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Usually you're going to be getting rid of fetch lands with this.
Yep.
You can pay black and then tap it to exile target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard. Each opponent loses 2 life. Or you can pay a green to tap it to exile target creature card from a graveyard and you gain 2 life. So this thing is just, it's like a relic of Progenitus, like, but on crack. You know, you can choose things to exile from graveyards. You have effects that are all extremely powerful that come with it. And I mean, just exiling someone from a graveyard is powerful enough as it is, especially if it's something that someone's looking to recur. If it's like a Marchesa in the graveyard, the Deathrite Shaman can take care of it. And you can also use it as a mana dork if people are using fetch lands.
Yeah, when we talk about graveyard hate, we're always talking about graveyard hate that's not just graveyard hate. Because if you're not playing against a deck that cares against its graveyard, then the cards that only worry about graveyard hate, they don't do anything. But something like Deathrite, if you're not playing against a graveyard-based deck, it still does good things for you. It creates mana, it deals damage to everybody, it gains you life. But if you are playing against a graveyard deck, it also like can hose them and take out key cards that they're counting on to sort of dredge or get back or flashback or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, absolutely. God, it's so powerful. It's funny, though. This is one of the cards I always end up cutting from my decks.
It's funny because in the 5-color lands deck, it was basically like my... Well, that deck has like 52 lands, so I think it was like my 49th or 50th card. I did end up cutting it. I don't know if that's correct. I may go back and add it. Like I said, the deck is not—it's not great.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. It's very often like right on the edge, and I don't play it. I have it in a few decks, but probably it's not correct. I probably should have it in more.
Yeah, I could see myself too, especially because of the shenanigans that happen with people's graveyards. It's just—it's never a bad play.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
The next, we're going on to artifacts now. The next one is Ashnod's Altar. It's one of our spoiler cards. We talked about it a ton already. I'm not going to go into it much. 3 mana for an artifact. It says sacrifice a creature, add a diamond, or 2 colorless to your mana pool.
Yep. And the new art looks awesome. I can't wait to see what this looks like in foil version because I believe this is the first foil printing of it as well.
Yeah, so. Go check out the Magic Man Sam's video ode to Ashnod's Altar. He says everything you need to know about it.
Yeah, totally. After that, we've got Chrome Mox. It's another mythic. It's a zero drop artifact. It has imprint. When Chrome Mox enter the battlefield, you may exile a non-artifact, non-land card from your hand. And you can tap Chrome Mox to add one mana of any of the exiled card's colors to your mana pool. This obviously is more powerful and sees more play in formats where you like Legacy, where you want to be playing Affinity or whatever. But this card is great. It's kind of like a turn zero or turn one mana ramp. You know, you have a Chrome Mox and a Forest in your hand, you can play Sylvan Library in turn one.
It's very, very powerful. Basically, any card that says the word Mox on it is very good.
Yeah.
It is card disadvantage, again, because you lose the card, but you can make it so that it taps for multiple colors. Yeah, it's definitely playable in almost any deck, depending.
Yeah, very good card. This next card.
One of your favorites.
Love this card. Yeah, I play this a lot.
Go ahead, you can read it.
All right, duplicate, six-drop artifact creature, shapeshifter. It's a 2/4. Imprint, when duplicate... Actually, that's fine. There's two imprint cards in a row. Imprint, when duplicate enters the battlefield, you may exile target non-token creature. So immediately, it says six mana, get rid of a non-token creature, exiling it. This will take care of many things on the battlefield, including Eldrazi. And as long as a card exiled with duplicate is a creature card, duplicate has the power, toughness, and creature types of the last creature card exiled with duplicate. It's still a shapeshifter. So this can become a 10-10 Eldrazi if it exiles Nulamog. More importantly, this is an enter the battlefield ability, so you can flicker the crap out of this guy. In a Kiki Jiki deck, duplicate is one of the best cards you can play in that deck.
Yeah, it's super good. In a flicker deck, it's just removal. It's just spot removal. That's why it's really so good, is it just exiles something and it's reusable. Pretty great.
It's a great card. I love that card.
You have taken out a lot of my creatures with that thing over the years.
Sorry, Josh.
it's cool. I'm fine. I'm good. Not bitter at all. All right, next one is Goblin Charbelcher. This was the professor's preview card. It's 4 mana for an artifact. Oh my gosh. There's a lot of words on this thing. Okay, hold on.
There is. Take a breath.
Okay. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. Goblin Charbelcher deals damage equal to the number of non-land cards revealed this way to target creature or player. If the revealed land card was a mountain, Goblin Charbelcher deals double that damage instead. Put the revealed cards on the bottom of your library in any order. This is a really interesting card. Now, I don't know if you can do... There's a whole Legacy deck built around this card. I don't know if you can do this in Commander. Probably somebody has tried it. Probably you can. In Legacy, you basically build a deck that only has one land in it. And it's usually like a dual land that's like Mountain and Forest, so Taiga. And you use like Simeon Spirit Guides and a few other... There's some other cards that can basically... produce mana for free or can go find the one Taiga that you've got. And so when you Charbelcher, you're guaranteed basically to just flip over almost your entire deck and kill somebody.
Yeah, pretty exciting. You do have to, it does cost 3 mana to tap it and do it. So you have to be able to play it and then get that 3 mana out. But like it's a guaranteed kill almost always.
You in Legacy, they use rituals and things like that that create a bunch of mana from one mana. And so they're huge card disadvantage, but doesn't matter because they're going to play the Charbelcher, tap it, kill you. And there's a lot of turn zero or turn one kills from it. Very powerful. I don't know in Commander if that's... it seems like you'd be crazy to build a deck that way because you can't even guarantee you get the Charbelcher. Like, you can't have 4 of them. And even if you could, you got 100 cards instead of 60. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's probably people that play this card, and maybe there's some decks with very few lands.
I'd love to see a deck that uses this in EDH and works.
You'd really need a few other cards that basically incentivize you to have few lands in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was enough of those, maybe it could happen. I don't know. I'd love to hear from people out there if they've seen a deck in their meta that, or anywhere, that sort of Goblin Charbelcher works in. It's, I don't know if the card's even expensive or whatever. It's a super interesting card, and it's one of those funny old cards that they would never print a card like this anymore because it's got so much text on it.
Yeah, totally. It is very interesting indeed. But again, it's one of those cards that started climbing up in price. Now has a new art on it too, which is very cool looking. I like it a lot.
I mean, it's one of the few Legacy decks that doesn't really require a really expensive mana base. Now, I don't think the deck is like cheap, but it's because there's not a bunch of tropical islands and volcanic islands and stuff. It's actually not like on the super high expensive end, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, we have the my favorite reprint of the entire set. I know it's probably yours, too.
Oh, yeah, because I don't have one.
Yeah. By the way, this is the first card that we mentioned on our Eternal Masters episode about cards that we want to see reprinted.
And yeah, and we were like, they'll never do it.
They'll never do it. And they did. It's Mana Crypt.
They did it!
Woohoo! Zero cost artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, flip a coin. If you lose the flip, Mana Crypt deals 3 damage to you. Otherwise, you tap this sucker and to add diamond, or 2 colorless mana to your mana pool. It is a free soul ring that just occasionally does 3 damage to you. You have a 50% chance of losing life every upkeep. It's, but otherwise, this card is absurd.
It's better than Soul Ring, and Soul Ring is the single most powerful spell in Commander and maybe in the history of Magic. And this is better than it in Commander because the damage means less.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's
so good.
It's beyond good. It is the card that I'm like, someday I'm going to have one of these in all of my decks. And now that's actually getting closer to being true.
Yeah.
How exciting.
It's still going to, well, yeah, but do you have Tarmogoyf in all your deck?
No.
Yeah, so that, I don't know if that's going to pan out exactly for all your decks, but you're definitely going to have more of them.
Yeah, for sure.
This next card, though, may be a lot more attainable now.
Yes.
So it's Sensei's Divining Top. We talk about this card quite a bit. It's 1 mana for an artifact. You pay 1 mana, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put them back in any order, or you can tap the top and draw a card, then put Sensei's Divining Top on top of its owner's library. That's a lot of tops. So you either rearrange the top 3 cards of your deck for 1 mana, and you can do that as many times as you've got mana for it. It doesn't require tapping the top. Or you tap the top, and then basically trade it with the top card of your library. So you put it on top of your library, then draw that card. That's also amazingly powerful because it protects the top from board wipey destruction type spells. A lot of times what happens is somebody plays like a Vandal Blast or one of those Nivinyril's Disc or something like that, and you quickly like rearrange the top 3 cards of your library and then put the top on top of it and draw a card, and then you know you're going to draw it next turn. So,
yeah, I've used this also to make sure I hit land drops. You top at the end step, you're like, crap, I'm not going to draw a land next turn. Like, oh, now I can. Or you can just top on your turn to like hopefully draw the next card and hope it is a land. You know, there's lots of different things you can use the top for. It is one of the best cards you can play in Commander, and now it's finally going to be more accessible to everyone.
Again, it's one of the most powerful cards ever printed. It makes the Miracles decks and things like that like super powerful. Think of top with like Oracle of Moldiah, where you just, you know, you can guarantee you get a land there, and so Oracle just starts basically drawing you 2 cards every turn. Like, top is so good. Whenever you have it in play, you feel in so much in command of the game.
Yeah, very often when I tutor for a card like with a Trinket Mage, it's either like, do I need the Soul Ring or I'd rather have the top? And usually I go for the top because I think in the long run, it's just a more powerful play.
Yeah, I think Soul Ring's probably better turns 1 through 3. And then after that, it's just top.
Yep, for sure. And also, a brief aside, a lot of people complain about the top saying it makes games longer and it drags them out so much. Yeah. I have actually never found this to be the case.
I think it does a little bit, and you know, one of the things
is... But not to the point where it's oppressive, I don't think, especially if you communicate it with the group.
Yeah, one of the things is you just have to communicate it with the group and allow people to do things like top. Like, a lot of times I'll be like, listen, I'm going to top on the end step before my turn, but if you guys do something crazy in the meantime, then I may change what it is. But,
yeah.
So just let me do this, basically, because I'll save time in the long run. And so, like, I'll rearrange my cards so that I'm not literally doing it while everyone's sitting there watching me. And then if somebody does something nuts, I'll go like, okay, well, I would have topped for something different on top. Then I'll do it.
Yeah.
But that's usually not the case. So
yep.
That having that level of communication and letting people do that will make it a lot better.
Certainly. Top is a great card. All right, next up, we have Winter Orb. You like this card a lot, Josh. It's a 2-mana artifact. As long as Winter Orb is untapped, players can't untap more than 1 land during their untap steps. Classic stacks.
Not a lot to say about it. It has to go in the type of deck that can take advantage of it. You also want to play it with things like Icy Manipulator or other effects that allow you to tap it when you want to.
Yeah, pretty powerful card, though.
Yep.
It's also a great way to, like, if you're up ahead on board and you know your opponent has to play big spells to get you in, they like, you play this and you're like, all right, deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times that's just good enough, right? Like, you're ahead on board and they're tapped out, and you don't have to be super far ahead, and you just play Winter Orb, and now it's like, well, how are they going to catch back up?
Yeah, especially if you have decks that have lower, like, you have a lot of two drops, a lot of powerful one drops, you know, in that case, you're really set to take advantage of the situation.
And counter spells are great because you hold two mana open. Now anything they cast that costs more than two mana, they're just set so far back.
Yeah, totally. All right. Oh, this is a huge reprint.
Go ahead.
Caracas. We can't play it in our format. But it doesn't matter because this is a land that is like $90 plus.
And the foils.
Yeah, the foils are even more
crazy, yeah.
So you can tap this to add a white tier mana pool. It's a legendary land. Or you can tap it to return target legendary creature to its owner's hand. Now, again, the reason that this is not legal in EDH is because it is just way too abusable. And it's way too powerful for our format. But it's just a card. We had to mention it because this is like another huge, huge reprint at Mythic Rare for this set. So it's very exciting.
I mean, when you think about Modern Masters, there was basically like one card in the about $100 range. This set has what, four or five?
Yeah, it's definitely pushing it.
It's crazy. I mean, and there's actually quite a few in the $50 or so range too. The value of the set looks insane.
It's definitely positive EV currently. People have made the calculations, and the average pack is worth more than the MSRP.
It's crazy. The next one, another very good reprint. It's not quite $50, but it's still not cheap, is Maze of Ith. So this is a land we talk about all the time. I believe it was on both of our top 10 lands. You tap it, untap target attacking creature. Prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to and dealt by that creature this turn.
Pretty good. You can do this to other people's creatures as well. So you can really be like, hey, I'll do you a favor. This guy that's attacking you, I can Maze of Ith it. You gotta help me out.
You can do it to your own creature, we've said. You know, if you've got Helluva or Kalia or a creature that carries Narset that you want to attack with, but you don't want it to die by getting blocked, then you can untap it really quick and fog it, basically, and still get the effect.
Yeah, very powerful. Our last card we're going to talk about today is
one of the cards spoiled.
Yeah, it is Wasteland. The brand new art, it looks like the City of Brass is being disintegrated here. You can tap it to add a colorless mana to your mana pool, or you can tap it, sacrifice Wasteland, destroy target non-basic land. Now, this card's actually been reprinted a bunch in different formats, but it's still a very expensive card. And I think it's 100% commander playable because, hey, you know, getting rid of someone's land is a powerful, powerful ability indeed. So,
I mean, this is the fair strip mine.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Strip Mine is crazy powerful, so even the fair version is still broken.
Not to mention, if you open it, you're just opening like a $40 bill currently. So,
pretty good.
Pretty good.
They don't have $40 bills though.
Oh, that's true.
So you have counterfeit money, and you're going to get arrested.
You should probably not do that, guys. Be careful. Don't do that.
Probably not do that. Maybe, but probably.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, before we get to the listeners, let's talk briefly about Grand Prix LA because it has finally happened and we are now on the other end of it, and it was an incredible experience.
So cool.
Woohoo.
Woohoo. GP LA.
It happened.
And this time we actually have it in our past. Like, we're not like projecting it into the future. Like, we actually, this is real. This actually happened to us. We're not faking it like last episode.
Yep. And we correctly predicted that it would be a blast. We had an awesome, awesome time.
It was crazy awesome. Dang, I'm still recovering.
Are you? It took me a bit, and I definitely need to wake up a little bit more. I think I've gotten a little less sleep than I wanted to, but yeah, I'm recovering a little bit too.
Yeah, I still don't think I've 100% caught up on sleep. It was great. There was tons of people. We met tons of people. I'm going to shout out some people here in a minute, but the moral of the story is Grand Prix are awesome.
Yeah. They are super awesome. It's just an opportunity for everyone to gather together and play Magic in an open space. Anyone can come in, anyone can play, and any kind of game that you want to play, you're going to find someone there that can play with you.
And you're going to meet new people, and you're going to meet new, you know, you're going to be exposed to different kinds of decks, and you're just really going to be able to connect with other people in the Magic community. It's really, really awesome. I can't recommend it highly enough. If there's one anywhere within your area, you know, you got to go check it out. I know casual players and commander players, it feels like it's not our thing. Like, it's a it's a competitive tournament environment, and that's not really something that most people who play Commander or casual Magic are into or comfortable with, but that's actually not really what the Grand Prix is at all. That's a part of it, but yeah, there's this whole other part that's just people literally just hanging out that are all Magic players.
Yep, that's the loveliest part. So let's get into some highlights. Josh, you had a lot. You played a lot of Commander that weekend. I thought I played a decent amount, but no, you took the cake on this one.
I was there all day Friday, Saturday, Sunday, played a lot of Commanders. I was going to play more side events. That was my plan, but it just, there was Commander games just going pretty much constantly. We had like an area with, I don't know, sometimes 50 or more people there. And there was a lot of people obviously waiting to play games with both of us, Jimmy. And so, you know, I just felt like I wanted to get as many games in with the listeners as possible. I'm not sure how many I played. It was probably somewhere around 18 games of Commander or so over the weekend, which is a lot, especially since all the games are 5 or 6 players, because, you know, you just got to get as many people in the game as possible. We capped it at 6. We didn't do any above that. But
yeah, so you got to definitely cap it at 6. Otherwise, it gets crazy.
Yeah, otherwise, yeah, exactly. So I think I only participated in 3 side events the entire time. So, but I did go undefeated. So that was good. In side events, not in Commander. In Commander, I just got destroyed.
Nice. That's great. Congrats.
But you've still played quite a bit. I mean, a big chunk of time on Saturday and Sunday you were there. So
yeah, and I managed to queue for a couple of side events and be like, all right, guys, we have 30 minutes for this game. Are you ready? Get set, go. And actually, there was never a single time that I had to miss anything, or, you know, every game ended just almost exactly when it needed to. One game, unfortunately, did end with me just playing Ulamog and attacking people with it, which is not like my ideal way to win a game of Commander, especially against people that listen to the show.
Whatever. But
time constraints, I was like, all right, Annihilator 4, this is certainly a clock. So that worked out.
Let's shout some people out here. So Jake Wafflecone Power 9 on Twitter and his buddy Jesse. These guys were the EDH grinders. Jake had a life pad and he kept it. And at the end of the GP, he told me he had played 41 Commander games.
Holy crap.
41! These guys would get there as soon as the GP opened and set up their Commander like stuff, and they would just play Commander the entire day. Go home, come back the next morning, do it again. These guys are, I mean, kudos, Jake and Jesse. You guys are, I don't know, you're the Duracell batteries of EDH.
Yeah, you had to go home to recharge, and that's about it.
Kenny, a friend from San Diego, K-Dog Legendary, and his buddy Tim were there. Kenny has a really good Krenko deck. Those guys are thinking about doing a Vorthos podcast, and I say you guys need to record that and do that pretty soon. Also, Kenny did this funny thing where I was playing in a game and he wasn't in it, so he just sat next to me and started writing down like all the political shenanigans that I was doing.
Oh, nice.
So every time I would like, and I didn't really know at first what he was doing, so I was just playing my normal game, and you know, I like to talk a lot during games. And so he would just write down things, and then I was like, after a little while, I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm just taking notes. And I was like, let me see that. So here's some stuff he wrote down while I was playing. He goes, somebody cast Wheel of Fortune, and then I said, oh, as a thank you, I'm going to cast Utter End, but I'm going to let you choose the target. The guy who cast Wheel of Fortune. The guy was about to play Elishnorn. Before the game, the guy pulled out Elishnorn, and I was like, Elishnorn, hang on, I'm going to switch my deck. And then I didn't switch my deck, but I was just calling attention to Elishnorn before the game.
That's pretty high-level stuff right there.
A guy played Dark Ritual into Erebos on turn 2. Erebos was his commander. And I was like, uh-oh, Ritual into Erebos? That's not good. Another thing. I would high-five people when they would take down a threat. Like, they would kill something, I'd be like, nice work, and give them a high five. And then I just kept doing things like going, wow, that guy's really scary because he's guaranteed to cast this next turn. Anyway, Kenny had, like, a whole list. I thought that was pretty funny. Their buddy Chris Nguyen, oh, geez, he had me sign a Jace Vryn's Prodigy.
Oh, yeah. That was so intense. I remember you telling me about that. I was like, wait, what?
I was trying to talk him out of it. Like, he was like, can you sign something for me? Sure. He hands me that, and I'm like, no, what do you want me to sign? And he's like, no, sign. This is my commander. And I'm like, can I sign, like, the sleeve? He's like, I'm never going to trade it away. It's my commander. And I'm like, okay. And I did it, but I felt bad.
That's hilarious. I believe I signed something for Chris as well.
Yeah, you signed a Chandra.
Yeah, not nearly as crazy. Yeah, that's right. Actually, that's awesome. Yeah, Chris had the Flipwalkers from Origins as his commanders. So
yeah, pretty sweet. There's a guy named Michael who also was at GP San Diego, and he has a coin flip deck.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the whole deck just has as many of the coin flipping cards, and he only tries to kill people with coin flips. So no matter what else he's got on the board, he tries to make sure that a card that like you die to a flip of the coin, basically.
That is, I love the flavor of that. I thought of doing something similar because red is known for that sort of chaotic effect. And so, of course, knowing me, you could definitely make a sweet red deck out of it.
You know what's funny is the deck's actually pretty good. In the game that I got to play against the coin flip deck, he won.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, nice. It sounds like it would be bad, you know, like it'd be like, ha, ha, ha. But then you play against the deck and you're like, uh-oh, the deck's actually kind of scary.
If it like boiled down to like, hey, you have a 50% chance of winning this game, I would be like, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's pretty good because I started with four people. I only had a 25% chance.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this was a highlight. I think this was maybe the highlight of the weekend. So Eric Landis is at @ProggyBoog on Twitter. He's a big listener of the show. He's been around since almost the very beginning. His son, Jack Landis, 9 years old, playing in the main event. So he's playing in the main tournament, the modern tournament. He's nine. He's at 5-3. So he's in his... You play nine rounds on the first day, and if you go 6-3, then you make it to day two. So Jack's in what we call a win and in. If he wins his last match, he makes it to day two. He's nine. So another listener of the show, who we mention a lot, Shivam, is there, and he walks up to the people from Wizards. I think he walks up literally to Helene Bergeau, who's like
yep.
in charge of competitive events and everything at WotC. And he's like, you need to put this kid, Jack, on camera. He's a great story. He's 9 years old. If he wins, he's into day two. And they were like, we should do that. And Jack got on camera for a feature match, and he was on the Twitch stream for Channel Fireball playing the winning in for his day two.
That was great. The chat blew up. They were like, what is happening? Oh, my gosh, look how young. Like, oh, I can't believe it. Yeah. And so that was really awesome to see because we got to hang out with Jack and Eric the whole weekend, so that was nice too. That was like a really awesome like culmination of the whole thing.
Yeah, that was a great moment. Jack was repping with his Ducks jersey on, and the funniest part about that was his opponent, because his opponent's like walking into the feature match going like, what are we doing here? Why am I in a feature match? I'm just I'm yeah, 5-3.
yeah.
Jack unfortunately did not win that match, so he didn't make day two, but what a showing for the young Magic prodigy.
Yeah, and that was awesome.
It just meant that he got to play more Commander with us. Another story with Jack is he borrowed my Joyra deck.
Oh, gosh.
He ended up getting an It That Betrays out on turn four with haste.
Oh, my gosh.
And just, like, basically destroying everybody because he just attack, you know, sack two lands, he gets the lands. Then the following turn, Ulamog comes out. It was gross.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So good job, sure. Jack. He's a killer. He smacked me in the face with Maelstrom Wanderer a couple of times, too, and I couldn't win against it.
He's a good player. It's amazing. He's so young. And also, he flicks cards like Brian Kibler, so it's intimidating.
Yeah, certainly.
Donovan was a guy we hung out with. He went to sushi with us. Donovan had a Narset deck, I believe, and then but it wasn't normal Narset. He would actually try and get a Salt Suit on it.
Yes, this is the best. So everyone gets Narset.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So he like attack with Narset, then Assault Suit, give it to the next person, and everybody just gets to activate Narset on their turn. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, some decks obviously got to use it a little bit more than other ones. For instance, I was playing my Xu Yun deck. So this is a deck that is Jeskai already and is all about Voltron. So almost every single card in the deck is a non-creature spell.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. I went to town and I got to clone it a couple of times. Basically, anytime he had Narset on the table, I found a way to get Narset to Assault Suit or not, because the card is just ridiculous.
That's awesome. So Shivam, who we mentioned earlier, this is a crazy, like, it's a small world story. So he's friends with the professor, and he was hanging out with us all weekend, and he had at one point pinged me and said, hey, I'm bringing my friend Ben, and he wants to know if he can hang out with us. I'm like, yeah, of course. So they show up, and he's like, this is my friend Ben, and I was like, hey, I know that guy. Ben and I had played each other in the final round of a side event at GP Vegas. And
no way.
Yeah, crazy, right? There's like 8,000 people at GP Vegas. Out of all those people, Ben and I played each other. It was a final round, so we agreed to chop. And then he was talking to me and found out about the podcast of the Command Zone, and we were talking, and he really wanted to meet Marshall. So, of course, I walked up and introduced him to Marshall afterwards, and he got Marshall to sign a bunch of stuff and everything. So Shivam walks up, he's like, "This is my friend Ben." I was like, "I know Ben." What a small world. I mean, what are the chances? That was pretty crazy. There was two guys from Massachusetts. There was Mikey and Sean, who I got into a game with. And there was another guy named Julian, who's from Alabama. And there was a fourth guy. I'm sorry, I forget your name. And we ended up getting in this game that was like the longest game of ever. It was like 2 hours and something.
Yeah, I walked by after playing two rounds of my Modern Masters thing. I was like, "Oh, nice. You guys getting a lot of games in?" And you just looked at me and go, "Same game."
Everybody was troopers. We ended up, you know, finishing the game. I didn't want to just walk away, obviously. But yeah, it was one of those games that for whatever reason just took a long time. Just people had a lot of answers. Anyway, big shout out to those guys. Of course, we had some of our fellow podcasters there playing Commander, like Phil and Nate from Commander and Podcast. And by the way, they just had their 1 year anniversary. So congratulations, Phil, Nate, and Sean.
Yeah, congrats. That's a big one.
Alex Kessler, Ben Bateman from the Masters of Modern Podcast also got some Commander games in. Actually, I don't know if Ben did, but Alex definitely played a bunch of Commander.
They were Ben definitely was running around filming a lot.
So. Yeah, Ben was working for Machinima.
Yeah.
Yeah, and doing a bunch of stuff. So, and he was, of course, dressed to the nines, as Ben is wont to do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There was a group with a guy named West, or I think his name was Weston, Chad. There was a guy named Eric. Eric, this was kind of funny. These guys obviously play together a lot, so I got into a game with them, and they were sort of already a play group. I think there was me and one other guy that weren't in their play group, and then there was like four of them. And so they knew each other's decks really well, and the guy Eric in the first game, I think it was like turn six or seven, he just infinites off, it kills everybody. And we're like, okay. And that was fast enough. I was like, let's play again. We get into a second game, and the same guy, Eric, he's playing a new deck now, gets out like Hermit Druid on like turn two, and I'm like, oh man, we're dead. We gotta just stop this guy. And so the entire table basically went, just tried to keep the Hermit Druid from going off. And basically we did manage to get him out of the game, which I thought was really funny because their playgroup, you know, knows each other so well that as soon as they saw the Hermit Druid, it was just like the whole table was like, nope, just whatever we can do to stop that from happening. Like, what can you do? I can kill it. I can bounce it. I can get rid of his graveyard, you know, and everybody's just working together. It was pretty awesome.
That's hilarious. Yeah, Hermit Druid is definitely one of those must answer cards if the deck that playing it is going to win with it, because usually you can just go off pretty quickly. So
pretty sweet. And then, of course, we got to hang out with a lot of the personalities from Magic. So James from Loading Ready Run, who I did not know very well but was staying at my house, got to hang out with him quite a bit. Really cool guy, really chill bro. Ashlyn Rose, we got to hang out with a lot.
Yep, professional cosplayer and streamer. And she's also done a lot of community stuff as well for like the streamer showdowns and all that.
Yep, she's super fun to hang out with. Professor, of course, who's a mainstay of hanging out with us at Grand Prix now.
Yeah, Kenji, Egashira, Numat the Nummy came down and stayed at my place. I love that guy to death. He came and hang out as well.
Yeah, we got to eat a lot of good meals with Kenji. We got to meet Blake Rasmussen, finally.
Oh, I've met Blake before. You have not.
This was my first time meeting Blake, so that was really cool. We got to go to a little Magic party. And, of course, Jimmy, you got pulled onto Magic TV.
Yeah, talking about the top eight cards that flip, because they do these really fun flip cards, or what? Top eight sort of things, and so they specifically were that cards that flip, because the number one was a fun one.
What was number one?
It was Chaos Orb, a card that, not like a flip card, it's a card you literally had to flip.
That's awesome.
I was talking to them, and I guess they did the whole top eight just because they were like, oh, Chaos Orb, a card that flips. Perfect. We'll do a whole eight based on this alone just so we can put this at number one.
Just so we can surprise people.
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious.
Cool. We got to hang with Melissa DeTora quite a bit, and she, in one of the sealed side events, pulled a foil Goyf.
The fourth one she has pulled from a pack.
What the fourth. Heck?
The fourth!
That's she has insanity. A playset of foil Goyfs. I mean, I'm assuming maybe she doesn't still have the one she's pulled, but she could have a playset of foil Goyfs.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That lady's got the touch.
Yeah.
Marshall, of course, we got to hang out with a little bit. My cousin Ryan was really excited to be able to hang out with a bunch of the people from the Magic community. That was fun. One of the really cool things we did was we got to go to this sort of judges after party after the entire Grand Prix was over. The judges gather and they have sort of a, what would you call it? Just a reception?
Yeah, it's a reception. It's a time for the judges to get some time that's not spent standing and judging and actively working. And it's a time, it's just to celebrate the work that they did, to give them honors and also give them a chance to hang out and play Magic because they haven't gotten a chance to the entire weekend too.
Yeah, and judges are just this special breed of people that they just want to be involved in the community and they want to help people. And they're just really, really great people. You know, most of them are so easy to smile and laugh with. It was really fun to hang out with them. And they do such a great job that I was glad to see them sort of in their element, you know, actually drafting and playing and laughing and having, you know, yucking it up.
Yeah, that was really nice. So that was a nice way to sort of cap off the trip for us.
Yeah, except for I capped it off by beating Kenji in draft. I just want everyone to know that.
That was great, and now you are 1-0 lifetime, and it's going to stay that way.
Retiring. Retirement.
Forever.
All right, so that was the GP LA recap. Oh, I forgot to mention my five-color lands deck made its debut.
Ooh,
I know
yes.
A lot of people are asking me for that deck list online. It's not refined yet, so I want to wait until it's good. Right now, all the deck does is get a lot of lands into play, but it doesn't do anything once that happens. So I played it a few times and it would get like 40 lands on the table. And then I'd be like, go. Because somebody would like, I'd be like, sweet, 40 lands. I have Titania. And then someone killed Titania and I'd just be like, okay, go.
Nice. Like, hey, you got there.
Sort of. So anyway, I'm working on it. Maybe we'll do an episode about it or something, but I won't have the deck list online yet until it's actually good.
Yeah, fix it up. We'll figure it out.
All right, time for the To The Listeners, where we ask the listeners a question and you tweet or email or comment back at us. We really had a lot of fun with this section. It's great to be able to interact with everybody and get everybody's opinions and thoughts. And the last week we did a big topic discussion asking for new topics, and people were great about that. If you didn't participate, we're still looking for topics. So go ahead. You can always let us know if there's cool topics for the show that you think we should cover. All right, this week, what card or cards from Eternal Masters are you most excited about and why?
There's a lot. There's definitely a lot that we did not mention as well, just because they, you know, we've already talked about a lot or they're just not as notable. But yeah, let us know because there's a bunch of stuff in there and I would love to see what people are really stoked about.
There's a lot of cards too where it's just kind of obvious, like, yeah, play that in the Elf deck. We know it's great, but it's not, you know, there's no reason for us to touch on it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Moving on to the end step where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic. I have something this time around.
Go for it.
It is Star Wars A New Hope.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Star Wars before?
Like the original, 1978?
Nope. I'm actually talking about a website, swanh.net. It is an adaptation of Star Wars Episode 4 that is a 123-meter long infographic.
What?
Yeah, it's you can load it up on your on any browser. It was made in Adobe Illustrator, and it is 123 meters long. It is just a giant, huge picture, and you just scroll down, and it's got little like infographics, like saying like the first thing that you see is it shows Tatooine, and it shows little blaster things flying by, and then it shows the CR-90 Corvette, Rebel Blockade Runner. Keep going down, it shows Imperial One Class Star Destroyer, and it's all these really great, clean graphics of everything. It shows what happens, and all the dialogue in the movie pretty much shows. And if you scroll through, you see the entire movie, but in infographic form. And it's really cool. Every section of it is really well done, and it's different, and it's cute because it's an infographic, and it's like it feels very educational, but you get to see the entire movie from this top-down perspective.
What's the URL again?
SWANH.net. So Star Wars A New Hope. SWANH.net. Yeah. So I know you're going to check this out immediately, Josh. It's really
crap.
Sweet.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's great, what? Right? It's like.
This must have taken forever.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a single giant picture. That's my favorite part about it. It's just this huge file. But yeah, if you scroll through it at lightning fast speed, it's great. You know, like. There's so much that happens in this movie, and it's great seeing all the little ways that the person shows the space battles, shows what happens inside the Millennium Falcon during a battle. Like, gives a little like fire warning, and then R2, you know, when R2 puts the fire out, and it shows a little ice sign. You know, it's like, it's great. It's super cute. And it's also just a blast to just read slowly and relive the original movie in a brand new way.
This thing is awesome. So, yeah. I'm totally going to spend like a couple hours now. Dude, people are crazy. This must have taken like forever.
Yeah, it definitely must have taken forever. If you go to the About, he made it in 2016, and I'm guessing it just took a very long time. So
it's awesome.
He's not looking to make money off of it. He says it is part of an artistic approach and experiment in order to create an internet curiosity. And that, to me, is art.
It's pretty sweet. SWANH.net.
Yep. Very awesome. Awesome. All right. Cleanup step.
All right, make sure you listen to the Masters of Modern podcast where Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman talk about the modern format. They got a ton to discuss after GPLA. They recently did a live cast from GPLA. Those guys were all over it. They're loving it. They're breaking down the new meta, talking merfolk and whatever else went on. It's craziness. Those guys know everything that they're talking about, and I know nothing about modern, so don't listen to me. Check them out on rocketjump.com. under the podcast tab right next to us, or follow them on Twitter at the MMcast.
Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Special thanks also to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG on Twitter, who provides the animated intro and the transition sequences of our show. You can make sure to check out our YouTube videos. We do full videos of every single one of these podcasts, so you can see the cards as they come up. You can put it off to your monitor when you're at work or when you're at home. Whenever, check it out. YouTube.com/The Command Zone Podcast is where you can find our videos on YouTube.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we hope to see you in an EMA draft sometime soon.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.